Hello, everybody. It is great to be here again today. My name is Gary Fowler. I'm the CEO, president, and founder of GSD, Get You Done Venture Studios, a premier AI and quantum venture studio located in the heart of Silicon Valley. I'm a 17-time serial entrepreneur with several unicorns under the belt. I was on the original management team of Click Software, which was sold to Salesforce for $1.35 billion. And also Eva, your virtual assistant. We believe at GSD that intellectual capacity is evenly spread around the world, but opportunities are not. So today, Simple Night presents, I have an incredible guest, one more time, Sanjay Bhatia. Sanjay is a serial entrepreneur with several successful exits under his belt. And today we're gonna talk about hyper-personalization in the travel industry. So with that, I'd like to bring my buddy Sanjay. Hey Sanjay, hey, how you doing, man?
Hey there, happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you, my friend. Hey, could you start by explaining what we mean? What is meant by hyper-personalization in areas like travel? What does it mean to you as a technologist?
So hyper-personalization is the usage of an individual's who they are, their demographics, their psychographics, their purchase history, their experience history in order to tailor recommendations, conversations, all kinds of things at Runday. You know, we do a lot of hyper-personalization and messaging, and whether it's like a mechanic in Alabama or a professor in San Francisco, based on their, you know, their geography, their education, all kinds of different things, you can often say the same things in different ways and get much better results.
You know, if you look at it, if you look at personalization and we talk about hyper-personalization, what's the difference in your opinion?
So I gave you kind of a high level kind of explanation, but I think to break it down into something very simple, like I was, you know, when we were in Bangkok last week, I was, you know, trying to move my flight. And so I was texting, you know, Delta, you know, they said they'd call me back in 50 minutes. And so I'm like, okay, I'll try texting them. And I was asking, you know, how much would it be to move my flight, you know, one day or one week. And it asked me, well, you know, what's your confirmation number? What are the cities and airport codes? Like, well, look, I have one flight, right? I don't have 30 mm-hmm. flights, right? So at the most basic level, it's kind of a common sense understanding of that person's account information and their, you know, future or current transactions that they're dealing with. If I order a bike, I'm probably not ordering 30 bikes. Like, it should not need to ask me my account
You've
number.
You've got 30 bikes now?
Not quite. I'm maybe halfway there if you look at between different cities, but you know, just it like if I have an order, like I did have a scooter that showed up that I ordered in December, it just showed up. So when I reached out and said, hey, where's my scooter? You know, it just says, okay, what is your order number? Why would it ask me my order number? It knows my email, it knows who I am. I only have one order, right? So I can think of so many examples where at the very basic level, it's common sense that if you have one flight or one order, that's the one I'm talking about. It shouldn't have to ask me for numbers, and especially if it, you know, I'm in inside of a text inside of the app. Now I got to like multitask on my phone. So I think at the very basic level, it's okay, what transaction am I likely to be talking about? Don't ask me, you know, don't ask me my phone number when I'm already texting you. And so I think just like it's everything from, you know, at the highest level, who I am as an individual, what kind of education level, you know, is English my first language, things like that, kind of psychographics, demographics. But at a more basic level, it's like, okay, I have one transaction. Just talk to me about that. Don't ask me about details. Like, just know what I'm talking about, like common sense. And then there's a whole spectrum of things in between.
You know, you're right about it. And the problem is we've got so many different aspects of a trip. It's one thing about the lodging and the hotel and the air, but what about if you want these personalized experiences to go to Pattaya to have a lobster, you know, and to find the restaurant? It's like there's no way to tie all these things together. So having that hyper personalized approach is important.
Yeah, looking at my credit card history, you could see, okay, I tend to go to all the Indian restaurants. So maybe, you know, maybe that's what I want to do, and that's what we ended up doing, right?
Yeah. No, that's great. I'm getting hungry just thinking about it. What factors are driving the growing trend of hyper-personalized travel, in your opinion?
You know, I think it's a lot of things driving tech in general and business in general is just, you know, there's 150 countries in which we have collapsing populations. There's a few exceptions, you know, certain psychographics in North America, France, New Zealand, you know, Thailand's is growing, not fast, but it is growing. But 150 countries have collapsing populations and aging populations. So in a world where everyone's really old, the young workforce gets consumed by healthcare, and there's no one to do customer service, no one willing to or able to do customer service at an affordable price. So what you're seeing is really, in a lot of ways, the media tells a story of AI taking jobs, but I don't think it's reality. I think the reality is that we just simply don't have a young workforce willing or able or in enough quantities to do entry-level jobs like customer service or travel agency, things like that. And so the only choice organizations have, if they want to thrive, grow, or even just survive, is to utilize AIs in a hyper-personalized way to serve their customers better in a more efficient way.
So let's talk about that. What's the role of data and AI in creating these hyper-personalized journeys? What do you think?
Well, the data has been around for a while. It's more that we haven't had to actually program something to look at your transaction history and do something with it is really hard. It's possible, but we just don't have enough programmers, right? It would have to be a very, very high value result to justify spending millions on a development team to do that. With AI, we don't need to hire the programmers. The AI can just use, you know, unstructured data. I mean, the process of structuring data so that a more traditional system can utilize it, it's been possible for a while, but it's like, unless you're going to make $10 million in profit as a result, you're not going to spend millions on a development team to do it, right? With AI, we can now do it at, I mean, just not even a percentage point at, you know, thousands of dollars instead of millions of dollars. You can just throw unstructured data at the AI and it can say, oh, okay, based on this purchase history or based on these transactions that are live, you know, how do I, you know, focus the conversation?
When you look at, you know, if you look at this whole idea of gathering the data, how would you go down through? You touched on a little bit, but, you know, you got browsing history, past bookings. I mean, another thing is, Sanjay, why do you think companies like Expedia or Priceline, they haven't looked at these more humanistic approaches to travel, right? Like, it's for everything, right? For commerce, it's why don't we have a more personalized approach to it? Like you said about booking the ticket with Delta, why wouldn't Delta want to have create experiences so people would use Delta Airlines more? It doesn't make any sense.
You know, it's just hiring the engineers. I mean, there's a talent war for the best engineers, you know, Microsoft, Google. I mean, as a technology founder, we've had, you know, many situations where we had a hire we really loved, but, you know, usually it was an H-1B sponsorship issue where Microsoft's just better at it than Delta is. So Delta's not, you know, startups or Delta is not getting some of the talent. So it's a talent war. There's still very few, you know, high quality engineers on Earth. And AI is now allowing, you know, more junior developers to do more, but it's at the end of the day, it's just an engineering problem that's expensive to solve, with previous generation technologies. Now with GPT technologies, you know, we can start to do some things, but it wasn't really until advanced reasoning models and chain of thought became available only a few short months ago that you could truly do this. I mean, we saw a dramatic shift in run day, around Thanksgiving, when we shifted from GPT to reasoning models for some of the outbound messaging. And so it was Thanksgiving. I was like, okay, it's a slow week. Let's try this new thing out. And lo and behold, the Monday after Thanksgiving, I had 15 appointments on my calendar. I was hoping for one or two. So these reasoning models that just showed up are actually able to do this now, and, you know, with very little engineering involved. GPTs, you know, could do it with some engineering, and prior technologies needed a dramatic amount of engineering talent to utilize data properly, to structure it, to utilize it, to train it. The amount of, like, you know, FitMatch, my last company, at the beginning of that journey, you know, we needed 10,000, 100,000 data points that are accurate and perfectly curated in order to do things. You know, today you're able to do things with dramatically less data that can be much dirtier and of lower quality.
Well, why is that?
Just the pre-trained part of the GPT, the pre-trained transformers, they've already been trained on nearly all of human knowledge. So they can utilize that to make common sense assertions, where if you're using a model you're training only on the data you have, the data better be nearly perfect or in some cases absolutely perfect.
You know, I saw yesterday Elon said by 2029 that all the knowledge of humanity, that the AI will have all the knowledge of humanity. And he said there's about an 80% chance of good things happening. He said you don't want to know about the bad ones.
Yeah, I mean, these are tools, and you know, bad actors can utilize tools as well, right?
Yeah, no, it's amazing, actually. Well, how do you, you know, looking at it, you know, when you look at these models, just in general, where do you see the line between customization and invasion of privacy? When, because it's so intuitive, right? Right, and knows everything about you. Where do you balance it?
So, I mean, from an invasion of privacy aspect, I mean, the bigger companies have already kind of invaded our privacy. I mean, this has been going on for well over a decade. And so I think the startups just, you know, they just don't have these databases. They don't have access to these things. But if you look at the larger companies that are, you know, especially the ones that are advertisement driven rather than, you know, the joke is if, you know, if you're not paying for the product, you are the product. And so just the companies that have been built on advertising business models, they have so much data on us. The scary part is when, you know,
yeah, that's what people don't understand. They're concerned about their privacy, but then they're saying, you know, when they log in, they're using Google or et cetera to log in, given all their data.
Right.
And they don't understand that, you know, there's a reason why you're getting messages when you're looking at an electric bike and all of a sudden all these electric bike advertisements start coming at you. There's a reason, right? They know a lot about who you are. And then you're posting on Facebook. Facebook's not free. Right. When you start posting on there, they're looking at what you do. It's fantastic, actually. And yet we think about
the cost of the free service. You know, the cost of the free service is you're giving up your privacy. I don't know that, you know, AI or these new models really change that. I mean, the bigger companies have your data already. The smaller companies don't. And the newer ones tend to have, you know, models where they're not ad driven. Instead, they're more, you know, like, you know, you buy ChatGPT or you pay for Perplexity. You know, they're just not pursuing these, you know, the advertising based models. So it's that simple. If you're not paying for something very valuable, there's a cost. They're going to use your data to monetize you. And so if you don't want that, you know, pay for a service.
How does Grok, how do they make their money if they're not charging to use it, or DeepSeek? How do they make money? We're using all these models and, you know, there's a lot of compute power. Where are they making their money?
Well, so they are doing something called distillation. And so, you know, OpenAI is spending, you know, billions of dollars on creating their models. You can take a model and sort of use it to create another model. I mean, now this violates their terms of service, but, you know, in China, that may not matter. And so you can distill larger expensive models into leaner, cheaper models. And, you know, I mean, Meta has even done this with their own. They take their biggest model and they distill it into their smaller models. And so somebody's got to pay for it, right? So someone's got to pay for it. And once it's paid for, then, you know, you can sort of distill a lower cost model that is something. But if nobody pays for it, it's, but we're just coming up with more algorithms, and the amount of training that's already been done, you know, historically, that can be leveraged. So new models don't have to like process all the data that's already been processed once. So we're just learning different techniques to leverage exist. It's not that you don't do the compute, you're just recycling compute that's already been spent.
How do you go down through, you know, going back to the same line, you know, how do these platforms address the concerns about the data collection and user trust, right? So that, you know, because you're putting stuff in there, I mean, you're using all these AI tools, you're putting all, you know, contracts, you're all kinds of things you want evaluated. That becomes part of the knowledge base, right? Everything you put in there becomes part of
it. Can, yeah.
So what happens then? What happens if you're, I mean, people are sharing proprietary stuff inside of these models. What happens to all that information?
I mean, you have to read the terms of service or have the AI read it for you and to see what they're doing it. So definitely if you're using a Chinese model, I would have a lot of concerns that if you're uploading a legal contract or some proprietary information that's a trade secret. I mean, China is, whether they do it or not, they have access to it. So, you know, there may be some policies where they're not looking, but they can look.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. And what do you think are some of the biggest challenges that, you know, as we move into this hyper-personalization realm, what are the biggest challenges that companies are going to have, that in the industry is going to have, just in general?
The biggest challenges are going to be the companies that don't embrace it. I mean Delta, you know, Delta's an example. You know, a lot of people knock Spirit Airlines, but, you know, I have a service dog. They make it really easy for me to take him with me. You know, if I need to change my flight, they make it really easy for me to not have to talk to somebody. Whereas Delta, I have to communicate with a human being or an AI one day potentially. But it's like, as much as Delta has better, you know, perhaps, you know, quality of seating and some other things, for me, I would choose Spirit over Delta, because if I want to change my flight, I can do that in seconds. And I don't have to wait for them to call me back, or, you know, even the chat on Delta, you know, sorry to throw them under the bus, but it's like they tell you in the chat it's 18 minutes before we'll respond. I don't want to.
Yeah, no, that's kind of crazy. They should have a run day in there so we wouldn't have that problem, right? You could help them out so they could. They need to have that 24/7. It's interesting. Because
again, if you're used to that more, like, you know, if you're just kind of like my dad's, you know, a big fan of Delta, he's used to calling them. And he likes that relationship where he calls them, he talks to them, he's willing to wait for them to call him back. But generationally, I think you're going to see future generations just don't desire, especially Gen Z, like they don't want to be on the phone. It's like me, you know, I'm a Gen X, like me with a fax machine. If I have to fax you to do business with you, I'm just not going to do business with you.
Well, I mean, that's, you know, like your own trip when you were doing that flight to Korea and trying to adjust it so that you could change a ticket. It's crazy that you would have that. We wouldn't be more astute having tools out there that can help you, you know, find the seat on that plane. Make that adjustment. Like
Spirit Airlines has invested in efficiency where for me to change my flight and know how much that's going to cost. I can do that in seconds, just with their app or their website, where Delta is invested in more of that human relationship that's more appropriate for, you know, probably the boomer generation.
Well, how do we get that human-like touch using these tools?
Yeah, so with these advanced reasoning models, you'll get both. So you'll be able to do a conversational experience, and it'll, like, understand. It'll be able to look at the whole database of potential flights. It'll look at my history. You know, what kind of flights do I want, all kinds of things, and just be able to tell me, hey, here, or I can just ask it to do, like, hey, give me all of the days I could fly and the prices for all of the days. And or maybe I just ask, give me the, you know, what day is the cheapest, right? Like, sometimes you care more at price, sometimes you care more about a specific date. So based on what I care about in that situation, it can use advanced reasoning to say, okay, well, I got to be back by, you know, a certain date. What day is the cheapest to fly before that day? Just tell me the answer. Don't have a conversation with me. Just give it to me, and then I'll hit accept.
You know, that's one of the things on the Simple Night side. You know, now they can go down through and create these unique experiences, an itinerary just for you, right? So
Yeah. Checking
all those things, but you're right about it. There's still hurdles out there. You know, we went through it last week, right, on the trip to Thailand, trying to change the tickets. It was such a pain going back and forth and going back to forth with Delta, just to get it resolved. It was insane. They should have more tools. And when are we going to get to the point, Sanjay, when you're using these tools that you won't know the difference whether or not it's a human on the other end?
We're getting close. I mean, with these advanced reasoning models, you know, I've certainly had lots of you know, demos we were on where they, you know, once we let them know that, you know, I'm the first human you've talked to, they're, and maybe they expect it a little bit, but they're surprised by it, perhaps impressed by it. And we've definitely, you know, gotten customers and saying, hey, if you can, you know, if you did that with me, can you do that for me?
Yeah, no, it's interesting. And when do you think we're going to get to the point where we'll have a digital twin that's just like you, that's that in the model? that can help us better make decisions?
We're getting there. I'd say to get a digital twin, we're perhaps like 3 or 4 years away from that. But I think what will happen before then is there'll be a preference for AI, right? So it used to be like when you called a number, I'd always hit zero to get to a human. The challenge is, with Delta, it's a 51-minute delay to get a call back. It's an 18-minute delay to get a text back. Why is that? They can't hire enough staff, the staff at call centers. Nobody can. There's no place on earth. You can look at, middle Eurasia. You can look at, there's just not places on earth where there's a young enough workforce that's not being consumed by healthcare, that they're cheap and will stay with you for years and years. That's just... that's a 20th century reality that doesn't exist anymore and won't exist for another 19 or 20 years. And so it's not that it's just forever, but until the aging populations kind of corrects, which is 2 decades from now, according to predictions, you're just not going to have people being able to do entry-level call center work or customer service. And so there's going to be a preference for AI. Today it's like, I think it's like for like in South Florida here, it's like a lot of people don't speak English. So if I'm at certain restaurants, like I'd rather have a QR code or a tablet. In fact, at the wharf here, like they don't give you a choice anymore. There's people, at these micro restaurants, but the whole ordering system is not through them. You hit a QR code, you order on your phone, and then they bring you the food and they're making the food, but they're not, they're not there to speak English with you. So we're just, this is sort of the beginning. It's not that this is going to get better soon. It's just the beginning of this pattern of young workforces are just simply not available anywhere on earth.
How do you think, if you look over the next 5 years, what do you think, how will this hyper-personalization trend evolve over the next 5 years? What do you think?
You're going to see brand new companies that just become dominate the market by embracing this. So it's not necessarily the just like with Spirit and Delta, right? So Spirit is embracing the younger generation. They're investing in their app and being able to do things quickly with the app without having to talk. And they're not investing in call centers. In fact, they joke about how bad their customer service is. They say, hey, we're the most profitable airline, and our customer service is so bad, don't even try. And so, but they're become very successful, right? And I will choose Spirit over Delta because, generationally, I would rather have the flexibility of changing my flight on my app than having to, wait for a person who might be super friendly, but I don't want to wait for them. And so you're going to see companies that embrace AI and hyper-personalization and conversational experiences to the younger generations start to dominate.
What emerging technologies do you think will influence the next 5 years? What technologies are out there for hyper-personalization? What do you think?
The biggest one, and it's hard to predict if it's in the next 5 years or not, is we're seeing rather rapid advances in quantum computing. And so this idea of language models being trained with quantum computers, that would potentially be that game changer where, like, not only can you not tell the difference between a human and an AI, but you will prefer the AI version of somebody, or the AI, you'll just prefer in all cases the AI over human.
What advice, if you look at it, what advice would you give companies beginning to integrate hyper-personalization and AI into their companies? What advice would you give them?
I would say just put yourself in the consumer's perspective and the reality that they find themselves in. There's inflation, it's hard to get help with anything. And so people are very time constrained. And so, and so are you, right? As an executive, as a leader, it wasn't like 20 years ago, you could hire an army of interns and entry-level workers. You're finding older and middle-aged executives having to do way more than they used to because there's no young talent available. And so how would you want to be served, right? Would you want to wait 18 minutes for a text message or 51 minutes for a phone call back? Like, is that how you want to be treated as a customer? I think there's a, not that the customer is always right, but there sort of has been a loss. I think traveling, you notice this, but I think in America, there's sort of a, I mean, I was just booking, you know, something with a, like a, trying to book a massage here, with, one of the local chains. And it's sort of like this, you're lucky there's any availability at all. Right. Yeah.
And the prices are insane.
Yeah. The prices are insane. And, you know, it's like, you know, it's like, I guess there's a contract, but I'm going to do whatever I can to get out of that contract and go with somebody else. So I think put yourself in the consumer's shoes. How do you want to be treated as a customer? I think we've forgotten that, you know, we've forgotten that as a country, where a lot of these businesses were built on founders that didn't like how the industry was serving them and created something better that was more customer, you know. I mean, Amazon's one of the best examples. Like, they've always had this incredible customer service mindset. I mean, Zappos was even more extraordinary in some ways, now part of Amazon. And so, but you know, that was 20 years ago, right? I think now you're going to see that today we find, like, it's like nobody cares about customer service because everyone's bad. But hyper-personalization will now allow some companies to excel at customer service once again and start to dominate.
Well, you know, it's weird too. It's just like that Delta flight. I remember, you know, years ago, the food used to be really good on the plane, even in the back of the plane, and you'd have real utensils, and the food was tasty. It's like going down. It's unbelievable, actually, how much it's going down compared to what it was before. The service is not, it doesn't feel as personal as it did before. You know, it's strange. And then they cost a whole lot more. It used to be you get the really good quality of service with some of these airlines. It's going down. What are your we're coming up to the top of the show, Sanjay. What closing thoughts, and how do people get a hold of you?
Closing thoughts would be this new era of advanced training models just enable a level of personalization at relatively low engineering cost that's, you know, incredible. And in fact, at Runday, we have an agent builder. So the input is just, you know, if you can edit a spreadsheet, you can program this. And so just contact me at Sanjay@runday.ai, and would love to explore this future with you.
Thanks a lot. And to all my audience out there, thank you for joining one more time. My name is Gary Fowler. I'm your host. Stay happy, stay safe, and stay healthy. We'll be back to you again soon with another exciting edition. Good seeing you, buddy. Thanks.
Thanks, guys.